Now, look, whatever you think about the way in which Julia Gillard became Australia's Prime Minister, the fact that she's the country's first female PM was a cause of celebration for many who've long championed the idea of women just wielding greater routine influence in public life. Well, over the next couple of weeks, Saturday Extra will bring you two perspectives about the status of females in modern life, coming at the issue from totally different ends of the spectrum. Both contributions come from prominent writers, and you can be the judge of which one is more relevant. Maybe they both are. My first guest is from the United States, and she may argue that seeking female equity in any workplace, even for the most important office in the land, might soon become totally redundant. Hannah Rosen has written a really thought-provoking article called The End of Men in the latest Atlantic magazine, where she's a contributing editor. Her central question, might women be better suited to the modern workforce than men? Is it simply more congenial to them? When US statistics showed more women in work than men earlier this year, it really shocked everyone, and the GFC was blamed for temporarily destroying many traditionally male jobs like construction and manufacturing. But Hannah thinks this isn't temporary, and she goes on to wonder out loud whether modern society is really suited to men. She joins me now from New York. Hannah Rosen, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Before we get to the answer of whether America's post-industrial society is better suited to women, why the question in the first place, Hannah Rosen? What are the indicators that it might be so?
Well, I just started to put different trends together, and that is trends in education, trends in the American economy, and actually the worldwide economy in many ways, trends in sex selection, whether couples who are able to choose the sex of a child were choosing boys or girls. And once you connect the dots, particularly after this latest recession, I just started to notice that women were doing really well and better than men in many cases by a lot of measures. The college measure is one that we talk about a lot, that 60% of women, 60% of degrees go to women these days. So women just seem to be doing really well all of a sudden.
And the fact that listeners might say, ah, yes, but instantly at the top end, they're not. And we've got a big discussion underway here, for instance, in Australia, about trying to really get more women into boardrooms. Now, you're saying, yes, I know all that, and it doesn't make any difference to my thoughts.
Yeah, in a way, that's obvious. I mean, I can never make the argument that women are in control and dominant. I can make the argument that the world is moving in that direction. I mean, if you look at politics in the U.S., if you look at the business environment in the U.S., men are still dominant. On the other hand, you take something like law school, where the great percentage of first-year associates, first-year lawyers are women. They're the majority of people in law school. You just feel like there's such a tremendous upward pressure that what's going on now is unsustainable. Women are moving up and up the ladder. It's just a very artificial system now, where you've got people in charge at the top who are men, and then everybody else in control is women beneath them. It's a little artificial that they should stay in control, and the more you have role models, as you can see in Australia, the more that it becomes, it's sort of less surprising that women should be in power
and,
or in charge.
And you assert that the GFC actually accelerated a trend that was already underway, and that it won't reverse.
Yeah, I mean, I think the recession in our case just kind of uncovered trends that were already evident and perhaps accelerated them, because the great majority of job losses were to men. I mean, and they were also industries that were very male dominated, such as housing and construction and even finance. And so and then in terms of perception, when you talk about leadership, I mean, there's actual jobs that affect a lot of people, and then there's perceptions of how leaders should behave. And I think that the recession also did damage to the perception of how leaders should behave. There's all this research now about testosterone and risk, and, you know, was it sort of excess testosterone that caused men to behave a certain way, you know, and make certain risky decisions? And right now, risky decision making of the kind that we associate with men is not favored. That's not to say that men are greater risk takers or more aggressive than women. It's just that these perceptions actually do make a difference, because the only thing keeping women out of certain positions of leadership is that people don't perceive them as being in those positions of leadership. So once those perceptions start to change, everything starts to change. And there's many other issues, such as childcare too. I'm not overlooking those, but that's just one important factor.
Yes, this is very interesting, because you write that the attributes that are valued in today's economy are social intelligence, open communication, and the ability to sit still and focus, and that those are typically characteristics that have been more associated with a feminine type, and that is why, and that the economy will therefore favour women more. I suppose men could learn those, couldn't they? I mean, if...
Absolutely, and I'm always slightly uncomfortable with these, you know, with the gender stereotyping, because I feel like, you know, the more women get into power, the more they essentially behave like men. Like, measures of aggressiveness have been going up over the years, how aggressive people identify themselves, what kinds of aggression they associate with themselves. So those things are not innate necessarily, they can definitely change. On the other hand, you have to look at something like schools and elementary schools and say, you know, we're in this moment, and in the U.S. we've been writing about the boy crisis for a good 10 years, we're in this moment where girls seem to be doing better than boys in schools, and, you know, in college and beneath, and you wonder why. I mean, it's not that girls are smarter than boys, they're not smarter than boys, and it's got to be something about work habits or the way they behave, and the things that are currently valued in school systems are just things that come more easily to girls, and maybe that just hasn't always been true. I mean, I'm not exactly conjecturing, but I don't think anybody has the full answer to this yet. Mm.
It's very interesting the way you put it, that what is valued by the broader society. For instance, you do write that the aim of the modern leader, the decision maker, is called often post-heroic or transformational. The aim is to behave like a good coach and
right.
have the charisma to motivate others to be hardworking and creative. These are things that you think women are visibly showing that they're more interested in? Question?
It's more that, you know, the way that business leadership is being discussed now takes into account a lot of traits that are, you know, that come from gender theory, you know, how you motivate people and, you know, emotional intelligence and learning to read people's cues and those kinds of things. I mean, this is language that comes from gender theory that's now being used in business schools, you know, about the differences between men and women, you know, who, you know, learn your employees' body language, learn to read their signals, you know, be empathic. There's no longer this kind of autocratic top-down model for leadership. Do I think inherently can't do that? I don't think that men inherently can't do that. I think that what it shows is that, you know, the idea of feminine quality being included in leadership is no longer anathema. It's sort of natural to people. People don't talk in this kind of manly, macho way about what it takes to make a leader. It's not like a right stuff kind of moment. Mm.
Hannah Rosen's my guest on Saturday Extra. She's a contributing editor at The Atlantic magazine and the founder of Double X, a woman's site connected to Slate. And she's written a very interesting article called The End of Men. Okay, let's look at what that might mean. Is this across the board that you're talking about? I mean, is this these job losses are there in manufacturing and construction, you suggest, but what about the service industries? Because that tends to move out of just the straight working class predicament into the middle class. Is that, are you suggesting it goes right across the spectrum?
Yes, I mean, sort of just to go up the ladder in the economy, part of what's happening in the U.S. economy anyway is that the more upper class women enter the workforce, the more they open up jobs for women beneath them to do the things that they used to do. I don't mean beneath them as in beneath them. I just mean, you know, sort of socioeconomically. And so child care and elder care and food preparation. And so if you look at the top 15 jobs growing in the U.S., all but two of them are traditionally female job, nurses, those kinds of things, jobs that women tend to do and men don't tend to do. And so that's one entry for women into this economy. Now, in the middle class, the majority of managers are now women. So women are starting to dominate middle class jobs, and ever more so because of their educational credentials, because they're doing better in school. And so the middle class is changing pretty rapidly. And also the sort of habits of marriage and the way men and women think of each other and sort of who has to work a lot and who makes more money, those kinds of things are shifting pretty radically in the U.S. And then what's last to go is the upper class, as you mentioned. You know, the men still dominate in the kind of, you know, very powerful jobs, and that's where we need to break through. I mean, one of the reasons that I wrote this story is because I feel like like if we don't acknowledge, say, that women are dominant in the workforce, then we won't ever think about how we in the U.S., you know, do childcare or how much we work or how we structure our workplaces. It's as if we're pretending it's not happening, and so we're not doing what we need to do to socially support this change.
And you suggest that a growing number of working class women in America are choosing to raise families without men, that the men just didn't add up for women, they just weren't appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, that the working class is the most, especially low working class, is the most stark change in the U.S. because that's essentially, you know, where we get traditional ideas of masculinity, and it really feels like it's becoming a matriarchy for various reasons, partly because those men were very hard hit in the recession, partly because those women are choosing not to get married, as you mentioned, and so they're sort of single-parent families headed by women to whom much social welfare flows. You know, there's new child custody laws, housing laws generally favor women, welfare laws generally go to women and children, and so the women are not, this is not good, this is not like a yay female empowerment kind of moment, it's just that the women are holding all the cards, for better or worse.
Well, it is quite shocking, really. Are you suggesting the situation could become dire for the men of America?
For certain sectors of the men of America, the situation could become dire. I am suggesting that. I mean, it does. There's certain sections where you just feel like it's a wasteland, where the men can't find their way, where they're not getting married, where they're not behaving as fathers, and they can't be employed, and that's really not good. And I think that's true in other countries as well. There are other sections where I think it could lead to greater equalization. I mean, for people with a little more money and a little more of a comfortable life, you have slightly more equal sharing of roles, and, you know, that has its own tensions, but, you know, there's many men, and you hear testimonies in the news from them all the time, who are happy to be relieved of a sort of workaholic life. You know, they're happy to have it be socially acceptable for them to work less and for their wife to be making more of the money. You know, it's clearly still an exception, but I think it's also a relief to some people.
But actually, you just make the point that whereas women often have been going for the last 30 years into male professions, and there were women actually in the financial industry, men are not going in the opposite direction, which should have been an option, shouldn't it?
Yes, I mean, that's if you look very broadly, that's a broad sociological historical trend that does explain something, which is that you can take certain professions like teacher, secretary, you can even veterinarian these days, which were initially entirely male and then turned to become entirely female, but there are none that go in the opposite direction, which suggests that over the century, women's conceptions of themselves and how they behave have changed very radically, you know, that a married woman could work, then that a woman with children could work, then that a woman with small children could work. I mean, all these things have changed so radically over the last 100 years, whereas I think for men, the roles have changed much more slowly, and it's fairly narrow what's considered acceptable for men to do and not to do.
Finally, Hannah, are you sure this is not another end of history claim? You know, the business cycle is dead notion. We all know what happened to those particular theories, because you are proposing something really pretty big here. You're not going ahead of your evidence and forgetting that, you know, one way and the other, human beings are still human beings.
Yeah, I mean, I can only say that it feels like it's happening, but not that it's happened, you know? So I couldn't say it's already done and this is the end of history, but it really feels like a moment in which relations between men and women are changing, and certain things will never change, you know, who raises the children, who's primarily raising the children, but I think we have been living for so long with these notions of what people innately do and from anthropology and all these various fields, we've been fed these notions, and it's just possible they're not true anymore.
Well, Hannah, I just know that this is going to provoke a lot of thoughts among listeners, and it'll be terrific to hear a very different perspective on things next week. Thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Sure, thanks a lot.
And Hannah's article is called The End of Men. It's on The Atlantic. If you go to their website, www.theatlantic, you can find it in its July-August edition. She's also the founder of XX, a women's site connected to the online journal Slate. Next week, Anne Mann, who is well known to Australian listeners and readers, whose piece in the monthly magazine this month about women is altogether different, women and girls. So Anne Mann will be on our program next week. Well, we're going to change focus completely and look at the art scene in Shanghai coming up next.